The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's been a horrendous campaign for the Conservatives so far, careening from disaster to catastrophe.
But the Tories don't have the exclusive on political drama.
This is Pod Save the UK. I'm Nish Kumar.
And I'm Coco Card, and today we're looking beyond Westminster, exploring devolution of power to Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland.
And later, we'll be catching up on some of the wackiest moments of the week. But first...
Never let anyone tell you that independence is separate from people's daily lives and concerns. It is fundamental to their lives and their concerns. It is about where decisions about Scotland are made. Decisions over our economy, our health service, our living standards. So on July the 4th, I'm asking you to vote SNP.
That's John Swinney, leader of the SNP, at the launch of their manifesto on Wednesday. Look, Scottish independence clearly has pride of place on page one of the SNP manifesto, but it might not be the issue that matters most to Scottish voters, and it certainly might not be enough to override a bad year for the SNP with finance scandals and the defenestration of Humza Yousaf as leader. Despite aspirations for independence remaining strong amongst the public in Scotland, more than a third of 2019 SNP voters are moving to another party, according to a poll on Tuesday from YouGov. The poll suggests that they're moving to Labour, and they're doing so because they want to affect the party that becomes the new UK government.
As always, take polling data with a pinch of salt. These are just a snapshot. But even if independence isn't the biggest issue of the campaign, there is some interesting news in the pipeline, not just for Scotland, but for all devolved nations. Just a reminder for any of our international listeners, when we talk about devolution, we're talking about the ongoing process of Westminster ceding decision-making power to the countries that make up the UK, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. So it gives them more control over things like how they spend their budget.
Right. So in their manifesto set out last week, Labour pledged a new approach to collaboration between Westminster, Stormont, Holyrood and the Senate and the regions of England as well. Labour has pledged to establish a council of the nations and regions, bringing together the Prime Minister, First Minister of Wales and Scotland, First and Deputy Minister of Northern Ireland and the mayors of combined authorities in England.
But devolution is just one piece of the puzzle of how to make the UK feel like it's more cohesive. So now let's turn to Wales, where this week populist blowhard Nigel Farage has launched the Reform Manifesto, and the Labour devolved administration in Wales has been having a particularly difficult time.
So we're going to be joined now to chat about Wales with Will Hayward. The last time Will joined us was back in March, and we just heard the news that Vaughan Gething had become the first minister and the first black leader of any European country. But 2 weeks ago, amid a growing scandal around donations to Gething's campaign, he lost a vote of no confidence in the Welsh Senate. Joining us now to discuss this bombshell is, as I said, Will Hayward, who is the Welsh Affairs Editor at Wales Online. Welcome, Will.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Last time you were here, you did say that Vaughan Gething was in for a rocky ride. I'm sure you have your I Told You So t-shirt somewhere in the room. So, I mean, you called it, right? It was written in the stars, I suppose.
Yeah, and also this is sort of a creepy tradition with you, Will, because you actually, even before this, last time we talked about the fact that you accurately predicted Vaughan Gething's win and pretty much accurately predicted the percentage wins as well. So, I mean, like, what's going on, Will? Are you a soothsayer?
No, I am the stop clock, and you come to me twice a day. I think that is what happens here.
Okay, so could you catch everyone up just very quickly? What went down 2 weeks ago?
Okay, so it's been well documented the issues that Vaughan Gething has had with his donations. This has culminated in a leak which came out, and it came from within the ministerial Labour group, where it showed that Vaughan Geffen had said in a message during peak time COVID, I'm going to delete these messages because they could be captured by a freedom of information request. Now, he told the COVID inquiry in Wales, when it came to Wales, that he had not deleted any messages, that they'd been lost when his phone was lost. Now, he then sacked a member of his cabinet called Hannah Blythen, and she had supported Jeremy Miles, who was his opponent in the leadership race. This triggered a series of events. So there are 60 members of the Senedd, so that's the Welsh Parliament, and Wales and Labour only have 30 of those members, which means they've been in an agreement with Plaid Cymru, which is our equivalent of the SNP. And what they basically said was, it's not a coalition, but Plaid Cymru will help keep Labour in government, get their budgets through in exchange for certain policy commitments. But after the incident with Hannah Blythen and all of the donation saga, Plaid Cymru have said, no, we're done with this, we're going. So that meant that Vaughan Geffen no longer could control a majority in the Senedd. Then the Welsh Conservatives brought forward this no confidence vote, and the Conservatives voted against him, the Plaid Cymru voted against him, and the solo Liberal Democrat, the lone Lib Dem, also voted against him.
the loneliest Lib Dem in the world.
I think they like to see themselves like a leopard, like a loner, not just nobody wants them. But but because Labour had 30 of the 60 members, if it was a draw, that it goes with a continuation of the status quo, and that would mean that he would be okay. However, two of his own party members were ill on that day, so they just didn't turn up to vote. Now, maybe they were ill, maybe there was something going around, there was something in the water, but they could also have voted remotely by logging in at home, and they could have even given a proxy to somebody else within the Senedd to vote for them, and they didn't. So he lost that vote. Now, it wasn't a binding vote, but it does mean that the Welsh Parliament, the democratically elected Welsh Parliament in Wales, we spend so much time trying to convince people that you need to take this thing seriously. He then said, no, this is a gimmick. I'm ignoring this. Now, bear in mind, Humza Yousaf, at the threat of losing a no confidence vote in Scotland, stepped down.
Yeah.
Vaughan Geffen said, no, this is a gimmick. I will not be stepping down. People were poorly. This isn't fair. And as you can imagine, that has been seen within his own party and outside as a it's a very sticky wicket for him to be playing on now. He's lucky because the general election was called. And that means a lot of Labour MSs, so Senedd members, are uninclined to rock the boat at the moment.
Right.
But that's soon going to be done. And he's going to face a real tricky issue of trying to get his budget through when we get into the autumn, because he doesn't command a majority. No other party is going to support him. And the long knives are probably going to be out from within his own party as well.
And how is this translating at the moment in terms of the general election campaign? Because obviously this is where we get into the kind of complex interrelationship between the devolved parliaments and the Westminster Parliament. So we've got this tension going on in the Senedd, and now in the midst of all of this, the Welsh people are going to try and vote to who they send to Westminster as their representatives. Is this rocking the boat for Labour in terms of their Welsh support for the Westminster vote?
It's coming up on the doorstep. So yep. Labour activists are saying that people are raising that issue about concerns around the First Minister and his links to the person who made the donations to him. And the lead in Wales is such that actually it would take something fairly catastrophic to be losing in Wales. And the last election was a real high watermark for the Tories. There are predictions that potentially it could be a Tory wipeout in Wales. There are a few seats which are too close to call.
Yeah.
Although their safest seat was actually Craig Williams, who was the right-hand man of Rishi Sunak, who made a bet on the date of the election.
We have discussed that previously. just in case anybody's missed that story, this is, you know, one of Rishi Sunak's closest sort of aides in Parliament. This is he's got one of the few potentially safe Tory seats in Wales, and he is being investigated because he placed a bet on the day of the general election.
Yes. Yeah.
For people Craig listening Williams. To the podcast, Will sort of has his head in his hands as he's listening to that. He's sort of rubbing his eyes like he's trying to alleviate himself of a migraine.
You just can't believe it, can you? They're like, we've got one seat. Right. We just don't need to mess up this seat.
Yeah, I have to say, Will annoyed by politicians is one of my favourite recurring characters on Pod Save the UK, because last time we were here, you were talking about the donations that Vaughan Gething had received. And I remember seeing you on Twitter about a week or so later in such frustration, being like, why does nobody care about this? This is such a big story. And then lo and behold, now it is a big story. So I think that's more credence to this, you're a soothsayer. We've had all the manifestos from the UK parties now, and Labour are promising a new Council of the Nations and Regions, bringing together the PM, Metro Mayors and Welsh, Scottish and Northern Irish leaders. Is that going to make this more transparent? Is that going to improve things? And also, how has it gone down in Wales?
Well, among Welsh Labour, this is actually really, really contentious. So both Vaughan Gething and Jeremy Miles, the people who ran to replace Mark Drakeford, both of them said, we want the devolution of justice, and we want the devolution of policing. The Gordon Brown report, which Labour commissioned, suggested something along those lines, not necessarily policing, but UK Labour have completely ruled that out. Yvette Cooper and Joe Stevens, Joe Stevens is the Shadow Secretary of State for Wales, have said, no, we're not going to do that. But Scotland has devolution of policing, Northern Ireland does, but Wales doesn't. That's a historical anomaly among any other things. But it feeds into this perception that actually Welsh Labour are not perceived as like kind of equal partners by UK Labour. The perception is that they're seen as just another branch. And what that's a real issue, because there's a reason that Welsh Labour is the most successful democratic party in history. They've won they've been the biggest party in every election since 1920. Whereas in Scotland, Scottish Labour 10 years ago got absolutely decimated. And the reason is Welsh Labour is seen as really, really Welsh. It's a really strong brand. And the perception is now UK Labour and also Vaughan Gething are messing with this massive success. It was Rhodri Morgan who coined the phrase clear red water. And that was the idea that there should be clear red water between Welsh Labour and UK Labour. And that's what's kept Welsh Labour successful. And that phrase was actually written by Mark Drakeford when he was Rhodri Morgan's special advisor. Wow. But now there's this scene of this blurring of the lines that Welsh Labour is just a branch of UK Labour. And at the next Welsh Parliament elections, that is something that Plaid Cymru, the Welsh Nationalist Party, are likely going to try and capitalise on, because it was really hard for them when they had Mark Drakeford, who advocated for more devolution. He called it Devo Max, home rule within the United Kingdom. He spoke Welsh fluently. He was a first language Welsh speaker. And now you've got someone who is very much seen as UK Labour's puppet, especially because Vaughan Gething can't say anything. It's only the support of UK Labour that's kind of keeping him in the job at the moment. Mm. And there's an argument that that's exactly how UK Labour want him to be.
Just going back to this Council of the Nations and Regions, surely that would deliver what Mark Drakeford was talking about.
The devil's in the detail always. So there's actually some fine processes in place now. If there's disputes between the Welsh government and the UK government or the Scottish government, there's ways to raise grievances. But actually, the final say on that is still made by the UK government. So the Welsh government, if they had a grievance with the UK government, can take it through this process. It's quite convoluted. And the UK government then rule on whether they're at fault. And funnily enough, they don't normally rule on that they're at fault.
Marked my own homework, gave myself an A.
Well, actually, it's even worse than that, because they can actually decide that there's no dispute to even answer. So it's not that you're marking your own homework. It's the fact you say there is no homework. So they can actually... That's the thing. The devil will be in the detail, but Wales is always a little bit behind Scotland, and that's for lots of reasons in terms of devolution. But it would never be seen as acceptable for, I would suggest, Scotland to be treated how Wales is, where it's treated more as an afterthought. And a part of that is because of the threat of independence is so much less in Wales.
Will Hayward, thank you so much for joining us on Pod Save the UK.
We should have got you to predict who's going to win the Euros. Who's going to win the Euros, yeah. Will? Then we can really test your powers.
Who's going to win the Euros? It's going to be... Portugal will get to the final and they would win it, but Ronaldo will do something selfish. So actually it'll end up being Germany.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Okay. You heard it here first. The European Football Championships will be won by the home side, Germany, on account of Cristiano Ronaldo's selfishness for the finalists, Portugal. I'm genuinely, because that's plausible.
Good. It's really good.
I'm going to be so annoyed if a draw means they can't actually meet in the final.
Thanks to Will, another brilliant interview as always. We're going to hear from one of Vaughan Gething's Senate rivals now, who's been enjoying a lot of national publicity lately, the leader of Plaid Cymru, Rhian ap Iorwerth. And Rhian actually spoke to Coco, and we're going to hear that conversation right now.
Thank you for joining us, Reen.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I have to say, I've developed something of a parasocial relationship to you because I've seen you in all the debates. I missed the one yesterday. I do apologise. How was that, just by the way, going up on stage with Nigel Farage and the Conservative Party saying rubbish? What is that like?
I mean, I really enjoy it. You know, I have a background in broadcasting. So, you know, being up there in a television studio beneath the lights, I'm at my happiest. But politically, which I guess is what you're asking about, really, you know, I realise that these are very, very important platforms for us. And I just want to go up there and, you know, speak from the heart, but also, you know, believing very, very strongly that we have a real role to play representing Welsh communities, and the response has been very, very good to those appearances. Hopefully we've been getting that message across.
Well, I heard you after the first debate, I think it was, you were saying that, you know, if you hadn't been there, you wonder if Wales would have been mentioned at all. And certainly, I've definitely felt like Wales has been spoken about like a political football at the moment, particularly as soon as we talk about the NHS. That's the Conservatives' comeback, yeah. Right? It's like, well... Yeah. Imagine if it was Labour. Look what's happened in Wales. I mean, what is the situation with the NHS in Wales? And also, how do Plaid Cymru differ?
And the Reform Party did that as well, basically launched their manifesto in Wales in order to knock Wales. Now, I agree with people who voice concerns. You know, I voice them myself about the state of the NHS in Wales. We have the longest waiting lists. We have, you know, after 25 years of Labour mismanagement, I think, got some fundamental issues within the NHS. But also, of course, that is deeply compounded by the fact that we have just lived through a decade and a half of austerity that has seen the stripping away of the kind of level of public service investment that is bound to harm the health service. So we've had a double whammy, haven't we, in Wales? And it's frustrating, of course. Yes, I'm quite confident that had I not been in those debates, all of them, Wales would not have been mentioned once. And I think I referred at the end of the ITV programme, you know, there'd be people thinking, I said, why this guy from Wales is here at all, you know, on a programme broadcast across the whole of the UK. But that is a metaphor for the way the UK treats, you know, Wales. Who are these troublesome people on the sort of western fringes of these islands? You know, we're not troublesome. We're just really trying to look after our communities, and being used as a political football by people who care not one bit about us is quite galling, yes.
Well, I think that leads nicely to what I wanted to talk to you about Plaid Cymru's separation from Welsh Labour. There was obviously a cooperation agreement. There's been controversies around Vaughan Gething. He's now got the vote of no confidence, and you've separated. What do you want to happen next?
Well, we made it very, very clear that after that vote of no confidence, Vaughan Gething should have resigned. I think it would have been the honourable thing to do. He lost a vote of no confidence because, and let's be absolutely clear about this, because Labour wouldn't back him. It was clear that all opposition parties, Liberal Democrats, Plaid Cymru and the Conservatives, were just reflecting, I think, the opinions of the people of Wales, as shown in opinion poll after opinion poll, that he had lost our confidence. But Labour had the call, and they were able to keep him. We have a very troubled First Minister now. Let's be straight about that. Keir Starmer doesn't seem to get it. You know, he seems to be absolutely happy to back him up, but that's not what the people of Wales believe.
Do you think that represents kind of what you were saying earlier about, like, you know, Wales is just seen as some sort of, you know, branch of a party? Do you think this whole incident represents a problem with Welsh Labour?
Absolutely. There's a real arrogance there. You know, we're fairly unique in the world, Wales, where you've had a party that has been dominant for a century and more. We need that cycle to end because it's not normal. It's not good for politics. When parties go out of power, and the Conservatives will go out of power in this election, they'll be kicked out, they will presumably use those years in power to rebuild and refresh. They've got a lot of work to do, mind. But we need, I think Labour needs that in Wales, and Wales needs that. It's not healthy. And the fact that you had, there was an extraordinary interview, I would invite everybody to try to watch it back, anybody with an interest in Welsh politics, with Joe Stevens, who's the who was the Shadow Secretary of State for Wales. It was a tough interview, but just on fairly, you know, standard issues. Why won't Labour at a UK level respond to the needs of Wales, even when Labour in Wales call for example, fair funding, for our fair share of HS2 spending, for the devolution of crime and justice? And she was so, so dismissive of all those things. And that's the that's Labour dismissing Wales. Let's be frank about that. And we need that to change. And that's what Plaid Cymru offers.
I mean, Plaid has done some really great things with Labour. You know, free school meals for all primary pupils. You know, there's been radical action on the housing crisis, steps to preserve the Welsh language. You're on the outside now, technically. I mean, is that going to be a good position to be in?
Let's go through some core principles. I believe in cooperation. There's never been a party with a single party with a majority in the history of Welsh devolution. We need cooperation between different parties at different levels. It can take all sorts of forms. Labour have been in a coalition with the Liberal Democrats. They've been once between 2007 and 2011, they were in a coalition with Plaid Cymru. You even have Labour and the Conservatives voting together on many, many issues where they can agree on things. And we had an opportunity to enter into a specific cooperation agreement based on 46 policy areas and, you know, developing those over a three-year period. I'm very, very proud of what we achieved through that. It's mature politics. We got to the point, though, where under a new First Minister, it was clear that there was a move away from the kind of radicalism that we were trying to deliver through that cooperation agreement. Plus, then you had the, you know, pretty unprecedented scandal that the First Minister was embroiled in, and it became clear that there were too many distractions. We'll continue to try to influence government, but it'll be in a different guise.
Because obviously, you know, the SNP, who have had a very bad year, but are also due to lose certainly some seats to Labour, because obviously Scottish voters want to get the Tories out. And they would argue that the only party that can really defend Scotland is the SNP because of this like weird relationship between Scottish Labour and ultimately Westminster HQ. Do you think the same thing for Plaid?
And that's what we see again. I refer you back to that Joe Stevens interview again. Watch it. If you want to know what Labour's relationship is with Wales, genuinely, watch that interview that was broadcast a couple of days ago. And let's be clear also, Keir Starmer will be Prime Minister, you know, come July the 4th, whenever the seats have been tallied up. He will be handed the key to 10 Downing Street. But that will happen regardless of how Wales or Scotland vote. So Labour will tell you, oh, you know, wherever you are in Wales, you must vote Labour, or, you know, we will face another Tory government. It's not true. And B, in my constituency here, you know, and this morning, it is Plaid Cymru that is in the driving seat to beat the Conservatives. So, yeah, we share that that common goal, which I think most of the UK shares now, to get rid of this Conservative government. Yeah, Plaid can do that, and we can hold Keir Starmer to account. Start doing that even before he gets the keys to 10 Downing Street.
So one of the things we've been talking about in this episode is Labour's manifesto pledge of a Council of the Regions and Nations. What do you think about this as a way of changing up devolution?
I mean, they It's a gimmick to me. There are things that we can do to strengthen devolution, and it doesn't include that. You know, any forum which, you know, could potentially be a way to, you know, discuss issues relative to Wales. Fine, okay, let's have that. But that's a talking shop. We can actually do things that can make a difference to Wales. You'll know that recently we were handed the report, you know, eagerly awaited by the Independent Commission on the Constitutional Future of Wales, chaired jointly by the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, and the eminent political scientist, Professor Laura McAllister. Massive engagement exercise across Wales. Thousands and thousands of people asked about it. And it came up with three viable options for the future of Wales. We can talk about what they are. One of them includes independence. But on option one, increasing, you know, the kind of devolution that we have, there was a map that was laid out for the Labour government in Wales, for an incoming UK government, of things that could actually be done to protect us now. You know, devolution of crime and justice was core to that. Labour have completely ignored that. So on action points, things that could be done, things even that Gordon Brown suggested in a report, which I thought was weak, you know, on the future of constitutional picture of the United Kingdom, they've thrown those out as well. They won't talk about fair funding. They won't talk about these elements. And they have this gimmick about, you know, a new council. Let's actually focus on what has been the kind of conclusions that have been reached as a result of, you know, in-depth studies, most of them commissioned by the Labour government in Wales. The UK Labour don't seem to care about them.
But I'm struggling to understand what exactly about it is gimmicky. It's better. It's a step in the right direction, though, unless I had that wrong.
Well, one of the main elements is that it's top down. This is London saying we will do this. How about doing things for Scotland that the people of Scotland want? How about doing things for Wales that the people of Wales say they want? On something like fair funding, there is agreement across political parties. On the devolution of policing, there is agreement, you know, between Labour members at the grassroots in Wales, even the Labour government in Wales, and us, and that independent commission on something that could be done. But no, Labour opt for something sort of top-down. We'll give you this. You know, it's the classic crumbs, isn't it? I don't want a talking shop. I want things that can make a difference to the communities that I serve.
But how are you going to do that if you don't have the threat of independence? Because that's been kind of watered down a bit in the latest manifesto.
Well, it's on page one, so I think that's fairly prominent. You know, everybody who knows me, everybody who knows Plaid Cymru knows that we believe that we cannot reach our potential as a nation unless we have all those levers of change in our hands. It's right there at the top of the manifesto. Because it's not an independence election. No, it's not, you know, the first chapter, but it's, you know, it's a chunky piece of the manifesto because it's a chunky piece of Wales's future. I've talked a lot about it in this election and I've explained exactly why it is I believe this. It's about a redesigning of the United Kingdom, you know, a new relationship between us as independent nations, you know, potentially sharing areas where we have in common. But it's about, you know, most people I talk to across the UK believe that something is wrong with the UK now. Things could be much better than this. We need a new kind of politics. And independence can be a really important building block of how we redesign things.
But the manifesto says a consultation, not a referendum. Some might read that as a rowing back.
I don't think so at all, because implicit in our pursuit of independence will be that there will be a referendum. And I believe firmly that it should be up to us to call that referendum. That is a demand that we have as a party. Just as in Scotland, it should be up to the people of Scotland to decide whether they have another referendum, not a government in London. That's fundamentally at the heart of it. But a consultation is exactly what is going on, and it's exactly what I'm driving forward as the leader of Plaid Cymru.
Okay, so Reen, last question. Something that's really set Plaid apart, and I have to say, as a, I guess you'd say, progressive left-wing voter here in England, I'm delighted to see you're always quite upfront that actually there are benefits of immigration. And that seems to be something that the other party leaders refuse to get into. One, why do you think politicians find it so hard to talk about the benefits of immigration? And two, why do you think, referring back to right at the start, you said, Nigel Farage launching his manifesto in Wales was giving it a kicking. He's obviously speaking to a demographic that does exist in Wales, that has concerns. I mean, I just wondered, you know, why is this so difficult, and what does immigration mean for Wales?
Of course, there's a demographic, and one thing that I have spoken with very, very openly during this campaign is that where people have genuine concerns about what might the pressure of immigration mean, what might it mean for our public services and public spending, we should be talking about that and addressing that, but also putting it in the context of, listen, we've had years of cuts to public spending. That's where the pressure is really coming from. We also need to talk.
Is there a lot of migration in Wales?
No, is the answer, and that's another irony, isn't it? Where people, there's movement of people. The biggest movement of people where I am would be people that have moved into a beautiful part of northwest Wales from either other parts of Wales or the northwest of England because they want to spend time here. That's movement of people. I've lived in London. I've lived in Italy. I've lived all over. You know, people move. Migration is being used as a political football, isn't it? You know, it is being used demonizing people, othering people, making them the reason for all our woes. And that's something, just from a personal and values point of view, is something that I'm deeply, deeply uncomfortable with. The exploitation of people's fears, especially at times of a cost of living crisis or depressions or recessions, is something that has happened throughout history with horrifying results. And that's why I would like a more tempered debate, not ignoring people's anxieties.
Obviously, we have to do the serious politics, but I do need to give you a bit of a grilling on page 64 of your manifesto, which is that Plaid Cymru will continue to push for Wales to be represented on the international stage at Eurovision. Who have you got in mind?
Oh, you know, Taylor Swift spoke Welsh at the start of her Eras Tour concert in Cardiff last night, so we might be able to persuade Taylor to be our competitor. If she turns it down, we have so many singers that could do it. My daughter, actually, there is a competition in Wales, Carney Gymru, which is kind of a Welsh Eurovision every year. My daughter came third with her group a couple of years ago. And so, yeah, I'll just be a proud dad and say they could do it. But we have plenty of others too.
Oh, that's nice. Also, I really respect the ambition for Taylor Swift. It's nice to speak to a politician that is not afraid of saying, let's think big though, shall we? Let's think big. Rhian, thank you so much for your time.
Good to talk to you, Coco.
Hi, Pod Save the UK listeners. We've got a very exciting announcement for you. Our next episode, which comes out on Sunday, is going to feature a brilliant interview with the fantastic Chris Packham.
But first, he has a very important message to deliver.
On Saturday, the 22nd, Restore Nature Now. It's a march throughout London. We'll end up at Parliament Square. And what we want to do is send a clear message to our government now and our future government at some stage in the future that we collectively, the environmentalist and the conservationist, everyone who loves life, anything that slimes, slithers, crawls and stings, is going to be standing up and saying, we've got to make a difference. We've got to change the way we live. We've got to seize opportunities, not confront problems. And we've got to make the world for our children and grandchildren a livable, safe and happy place to be. We're going to make a last stand for nature. So come along on Saturday.
Where's the start of the march?
Start of the march is Park Lane, finish up in Parliament Square.
And what time should people meet?
12:30, ready to leave.
Fantastic.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So let's turn now to Northern Ireland, an electorate that it's fair to say hasn't been getting much attention this election cycle. As a quick refresher, like Scotland and Wales, Northern Ireland has a devolved administration, the Northern Irish Assembly, headquartered in Stormont in Belfast, and it has an unusual political system of power sharing, meaning that there is no majority government, instead requiring collaboration between multiple smaller parties. The largest party in Stormont is currently the Irish Nationalist Party, Sinn Féin, followed by the DUP, a unionist party. So joining us from Belfast is journalist Amanda Ferguson. Welcome back to PSUK.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Amanda, you actually got the chance to ask a question of our Prime Minister when he made his a cursory appearance in Belfast.
Yes, it was short and sweet. I asked him about the Rwanda policy, about why, if the lawyers had said that the flights could take off before the election, that they weren't. And he answered a question, but it wasn't really the question that I had asked him. And I tried at the end of the press conference to slip in a little cheeky question about campaign music, but he didn't seem up for answering that either.
Did he just walk off?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. But I think that he was probably reeling because one of my colleagues had asked him about Titanic imagery, and he had just to take a life jacket off before he arrived with us. So I think it hadn't worked very well for him after the whole D-Ream things can only get better debacle. So short and sweet. And it did really kind of feel like a box ticking exercise. But it's, you know, Northern Ireland people don't vote for the Labour Party because Labour doesn't stand in Northern Ireland, and a handful of Conservative candidates do stand. However, I think it's usually because they want to prove themselves, so they get picked for a seat in England to run at the next election. Wow. So they come and go, and I think it's something like somewhere between 0.3 and 0.7% of the vote goes to the Conservatives in Northern Ireland. So it's a different ball game over here on this side of the Irish Sea.
So look, last time we spoke to you, power sharing was just returning to the Northern Ireland Assembly. Civil servants have been running the government for almost 2 years after the unionist DUP party pulled out in protest at the UK government's Brexit deal. But in March, the DUP leader, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, then resigned after being charged with historic sex offences, including rape and gross indecency against a child. He denies the allegations. He was sitting as an independent MP in Westminster until Parliament was dissolved. He's actually due in court on July the 3rd, which is the day before the general election. Amanda, could this have any bearing on the vote the next day in Northern Ireland?
Well, it is something that people are talking about. You know, obviously the level of polling and information that we get, you know, isn't as extensive in Northern Ireland as it would be in Britain. There's been one poll since all those court allegations emerged, and they did show that the DUP had taken a little bit of a slap, a little bit of a dip. But I think that the DUP is under pressure on a range of fronts. You know, what's the fallout from the court case going to be? But also the TUV, the sort of hardline unionist, small unionist party in Northern Ireland is standing in that sort of unusual reform UK link up that it has and doesn't have, but they very much don't like the DUP's return to government based on the deal that the UK government and the EU came to for Northern Ireland. So the DUP is facing pressure not only because of that court case, but also because of dissatisfaction among some unionists about the post-Brexit trade-in arrangements and a return to government. And we kind of are in the sort of strange position where Stormont's just back up and running for a few months, and immediately the parties are being thrown into an electoral campaign where they're competing against each other. So they're in government together but competing against each other, and then of course the constitutional question is always at the top of people's minds. And voting tactically, there's only 18 seats in Northern Ireland, so I think one of the big stories of the election would be does Sinn Féin emerge as the largest party of Westminster after emerging as the largest party of local government and Stormont?
So just to follow up on that, you know, for our international listeners, Sinn Féin don't take their seats in Westminster. It's in alignment with their beliefs that British institutions should have no power in Ireland, and consequently they should have no power in Britain. You mentioned there that Sinn Féin are looking to make some gains. How significant would it be if they win all the levels of government?
Yeah, well, it would certainly add to that sort of building picture that they would like a border poll in the future on the future constitutional position of Northern Ireland. As you mentioned there, they don't take their seats. I think that this comes up every Westminster election that Sinn Féin are abstentionists, whereas the smaller nationalist, Irish nationalist part of the SDLP do take their seats. Now, they don't believe the oath that they have to swear to take their seats. And I think it can be like a binary discussion. You know, if one party is right, the other party has to be wrong. Whereas you can argue that there's merit in both positions, either saying that you don't want to be part of it or that you are prepared to be part of it. But, you know, it's only 18 seats that we have in Northern Ireland. So it's very rare that parties here would be kingmakers, as described. You know, that did happen previously when the DUP propped up the Conservatives. But I think if the electoral fortunes of Labour are to be believed, then a lot of people will be focusing on, if Labour forms the next government, what their policies will be with regard to Northern Ireland. But we don't even have the manifesto details. There's going to be a manifesto launch today, and then the rest are scheduled for the rest of the week. So, you know, it's elections in Northern Ireland, unfortunately, are very rarely about policy. They're usually just about what people want for the future. And also it'll be interesting to see if that third bloc, that alliance sort of cross community block, makes any gains on the one seat that they got last time.
Yeah, there's three sort of sections within the kind of Northern Irish voting bloc. We've got the unionists, we've got the nationalists, and then there's the kind of alliance, who are actually neutral on the union. And it seems like the voters within those three different blocs have slightly different priorities. So polling last week in the Belfast Telegraph showed that the commitment to Northern Ireland remaining in the union was the top issue for 71% of unionist voters in this election. But for 66% of Sinn Féin and SDLP voters, both of which are nationalist parties, the cost of living crisis is the single biggest issue. And for Alliance voters, it's even higher. 77% say the cost of living is the most important issue on July the 4th. Is there a danger for unionist parties that they're talking too much about the union and preserving the union and not enough about things that are actually impacting on people's day-to-day lives in Northern Ireland?
Well, they would probably reject that assessment, but, generally what we have seen is the unionist parties are focusing on the strength of the union, and non-unionist parties are focusing on Tory austerity and getting the Tory government out. And I think that's partially because they don't want to really be attacking each other because the sort of power sharing up at Stormont is so fragile. But certainly the cost of living is a major issue for everyone, whether you're unionist, Republican or other, and that definitely is something that is coming up. But of course, unionist parties are focused on the fact that there's a change in political landscape, and that the sort of majority and dominance that they had in the past doesn't exist in the way that it did, which is why you're seeing sort of lobby groups popping up either to promote a new Ireland or to promote strengthening the union. But it'll certainly be an interesting one. It always is in Northern Ireland, and there may be a few shocks along the way. I haven't gone down to the bookies just yet, but I've made my choices, and we'll see whether I'm right or wrong. I usually, the last two Westminster elections, I've got 17 out of the 18 constituencies.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
But it's the same one that I've got wrong on both times, and it's been foiled up in the northwest, so maybe I'll get it right this time. I don't know.
Okay, well, after the election, we will obviously be checking back in with you, Amanda, to find out whether you managed to get 18 out of 18. But in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one: download Rocket Money. Step two: link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And now it's time for the section where we chew over the most delightful clips of the campaign, which I've lovingly retitled Charming and Quizzical Moments. I've even got a new theme tune for it.
What the fuck was that?
Who made that? Where in the stock music did you get that from?
So last week we called out for some suggestions for a new title for the section that I kept referring to as WT Fuck because I thought it was funny. We've had some fantastic comments in. Here's a few. To be fair, I think this campaign by the Tories has been so insane that the current version of WTF is completely appropriate. That was at Darkfire515. Nope, WTF fits. That's at KittyBlueTT8887. ConstanceBase1612 has said, Coco, we use all words at our house. We don't discriminate. Vanessa 5217 has said, call the WTF moments holy fucking shit moments. HFS moments. Vanessa has said that the intention of this is to wind Coco up some more. Someone else commenting on YouTube has said, please keep the name WTC moments.
My goodness me. Which... very vulgar listeners. Do you know what I mean?
That was a reference to last week where Coco said she thought WTF was too rude, so I suggested we call it WTC. I think you all know what the C word is. And Kunal said, in response to Coco's call for alternatives to WTF and other swear words, my immediate instinct was to replace fuck with Farage. But then I remembered two problems. One is that you guys don't want to give that guy more publicity than he deserves. The other is that I already use the word. This is absolutely sensational. I already use the word Farage at home to refer to the foul liquid that's sometimes found at the bottom of bins.
Oh, wow.
I think that is absolutely perfect.
That's
oh,
gorgeous.
God. You cleaned out the bin. It's full of Farage.
See, this is what I'm saying, Nish. When you stop swearing, creativity blossoms, right? Swearing is, you know, is it big? Is it clever? I'd just like to say other listeners actually agree with me. So right. We've had some comments here. So Albert Brammer 9263 says, WTF, change it to WWW. Why? Christine Maitland says, oh, spare me, which I quite like that because it's a little bit, it's very like, oh, darling. It's a bit Jane Austen.
OSM.
You know what I mean? We could, yeah. You know, it's all like scoundrels. And then Vulcan Nerd says, what the Nish, which I quite enjoy.
Yeah, I don't mind WTF.
Yeah, what the Nish?
Well, look, like our democracy, the selection process for this name is deeply unfair. So in the spirit of First Past the Post, the name stays. WT fuck it is.
Okay.
I'm going to start referring to bin juice as Farage. There's a real build-up of Farage.
Well, this has been a chilling episode of democracy, isn't it? Thank you for that. What? So we're going to keep it because you said it, basically?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, in these lovely, charming moments and sometimes curious too, we have Tony Blair wading in on trans issues for seemingly no reason whatsoever. It's also Pride Month, though. Thank you for that. He has issued this quote, a man has a penis and a woman has a vagina. So even though that ignores intersex people and whatever, man, why?
I have this theory that Tony Blair has aesthetically, he emerged from the pandemic looking like a supervillain from a 1980s film. If you look at Tony Blair now, he's got this sort of lank grey mullet and he permanently looks like he's about to attempt to murder Bruce Willis in an 80s blockbuster. He's in his villain era,
yeah.
Which is a phrase that I was taught recently by a young person.
Oh, do we all have villain eras?
I guess so. I have to say, I really thought Tony Blair's villain era was the Iraq War. He's clearly Blair's in his second villain era.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gosh, yeah, double villain.
So LBC is a talk radio channel in the United Kingdom. Keir Starmer has done a Q&A where people were able to call in and ask him questions. So Rishi Sunak did his one this morning as we record on Wednesday the 19th. And I mean, it was an absolute calamity. He was denounced as a liar on several occasions and referred to as a pound shop Nigel Farage. He was castigated by callers on the Conservative Party's record of austerity and its impact on young people. A person who called in describing themselves as a young person in this country said that he was lying through his teeth about the Conservative record. Sophie in Bury asked why the number of food banks has risen from 35 to 1,200 since 2010. And Paul from Manchester took him to task on his record of transphobic remarks, specifically referencing his behaviour the day Brianna Jai's mum came to Parliament, who was a trans woman who was murdered. And that was when he was referred to as a pound shop Nigel Farage. I mean, it was an unrelenting cross-examination by well-informed members of the public that really flies in the face of this idea that the Conservative Party has achieved a huge amount since 2010.
Genuinely, hearing you recount that, I felt patriotic. Genuinely, I was like, oh, gosh. So touching.
On the subject of the Conservative Party being the absolute pits, a Tory MP seeking re-election in Dudley, Marco Longhi, launched an attack on his Labour Party opponent. So he wrote in a letter addressed to the British Pakistani / Kashmiri community in Dudley. Longhi said, "Will it be me or Labour Party candidate Sonia Kumar?" No relation to me. Sonia Kumar underlining his rival's name. Now, various people have pointed out that this is a reference to Ms. Kumar's British Indian background, in the hope of persuading British Pakistani Muslims not to vote for her. Sonia Kumar, who is a Sikh, said that it was unacceptable to imply she would not stand up for all of her constituents because of her religion and heritage, and asked if he had been divisive by highlighting Ms. Kumar's surname. Mr. Longhi told the BBC, "I don't know what her ethnicity or religious background is. I am not trying to stoke division." Why did you underline the name Kumar? And let me just say this. This is a classic throwback from the Conservative Party, and it's a throwback very far. It's a throwback to the Raj. It's a throwback to British rule in India and the policy of divide and rule and trying to establish tensions between South Asian Muslims and South Asian Hindus. Marco Longhi, in absolute fairness to him, is participating in a tradition that dates back well over 150 years. It is an astonishing and astounding attempt. The Conservative Party has clearly decided we can't point to anything in the last 14 years. Let's go back to the middle of the 19th century and the response to the Bengal uprising, and let's try and divide and rule the South Asian population. What is he going to do next? Propose separate electorates for Hindus and Muslims? It is absolutely astounding. Astounding. It is astounding to me. And it's also astounding to me that our British Indian Prime Minister has no comment to make about this. That pound shop Nigel Farage has no comment to make about the behaviour of his own MPs. I want this election over because I want them gone. I know I say this every week, but I want them gone. And I don't just want the Conservative Party to be consigned to electoral oblivion. I want them to be consigned to political oblivion. I cannot stress this enough. I have gone beyond the point of thinking we need a decent... We need them gone.
Yeah.
We need the Conservative Party as a whole needs to be wrapped up, and then the centre-right can start again with a new party. I don't know what they want to call it. The Blue Warriors. I don't know what they want to call it. They can get a whole new name, a whole new branding. The Conservative Party must end for the good of this country. Finally, let's go to your friend, dear Aunt Suella.
I have a question for everybody. Who wants to go to the Four Seasons Orlando?
Oh, no.
What the hell is this?
Oh, God.
What in the name of God is happening in this video? She's sort of strutting around with people holding placards around her.
You know what really hurts me the most is she's wearing a Breton shirt.
Right.
Which is my favourite type of shirt. The sort of homage to the classic French, northern French. You're a fucking Brexiteer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. First of all, how unpatriotic of her.
Yeah.
She should be wearing a shirt with a British bulldog drinking a pint of real ale. Not a Breton shirt.
Outrageous. So what we've seen here is a very strange video showing Suella Braverman in her constituency holding a sign essentially saying, you know, vote for me. And she walks along with a bit of a strut.
She starts by lip syncing to the phrase, do you want to go to the Four Seasons Orlando? I'm sorry. I'm sure there'll be listeners tearing their hair out saying this is a very famous thing on TikTok. Why do you not know about this? I don't know what it is. Based on Suella Braverman's comfort in front of the camera, she doesn't have a fucking clue either. And then there's sort of people doing kind of choreographed movements behind her holding the sign saying vote Suella, and she's strutting in sunglasses. It's sort of unfathomable. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's excruciating.
Well, one of the comments about it is that it's a really good example of something known as the millennial pause, which is what Gen Z say millennials tend to do, which is when the camera starts rolling, they take a pause because they're like, oh God, I'm on.
Yeah.
And so all of the videos like that. I would just like to say that genre of Gen Z's making fun of millennials is extremely funny.
Yeah.
And my favourite one is the millennial side parting.
What's the millennial side parting?
Apparently only our generation side part. I don't know.
Unfortunately, it's not a problem that
You just go up. You're building upwards.
When I was a kid, my mum used to tell hairdressers, he's got a side parting in there. And they'd be like, where? Yeah. This kid looks like Marge Simpson. Like, I don't understand how you're going to... And so when I was a kid, my mum would force them to, like, drag my hair over to one side.
You.
And I'd come out looking like Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable. Like, this sort of lopsided, curly mop. The millennial side parting... The millennial pause, I understand. That makes a lot of sense to me as a joke. But the millennial side parting, I'm afraid, it's not relevant to me.
I mean, please do send us your other millennial digs. I genuinely very much enjoy them. Anyway, that's it. That is the episode. Thank you for listening to Pod Save the UK.
Thanks for listening. While we're waiting for Election Day, we're going to be talking more about manifesto pledges. So we want to hear your thoughts. Email us at psuk@reducedlistening.co.uk or drop us a voice note on WhatsApp. Our number is 07494 933 444. Internationally, that's +44 7494 933 444. Send us your thoughts, your comments and your suggestions for new names for a potential party to replace the Conservative Party once they've been wound up for good and abandoned like a derelict building.
Don't forget to follow @PodSaveTheUK on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter. And you can find us on YouTube. Catch full episodes and highlights from us on there. It's in colour and everything, so you can see us. You can see Nisha's eyes, which people like to comment about. Is that weird to mention that?
I don't know.
I just want to create more moments of awkwardness for you, really, after you stitch me up with WTF. So how do you like it now? Please drop us a review also. Our rivalry demands it.
Please don't review our physical appearance, though. I feel like we need to separate the reviews from comments about our physical appearance in general.
That is not appropriate. Pod Save the UK is a reduced listening production for Crooked Media.
Thanks to senior producer James Tyndale and digital producer Alex Bishop.
Our theme music is by Vasilis Fotopoulos.
Thanks to our engineer, Hannah Stewart.
The executive producers are Anishka Sharma, Louise Cotton, Dan Jackson and Madeline Herringer, with additional support from Ari Schwartz.
Remember to hit subscribe for new shows on Thursdays on Amazon, Spotify or Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
All over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.